The following talk is from St. Michael's Fulwell, a gospel-centered community for Fulwell, Teddington, and beyond. Our passion is to see every life following Jesus. For more information, visit our website, stmichaelsfulwell.co.uk.
Welcome to Have Share Your Faith in a Disinterested World. So we have done this sermon series, Know and Tell the Gospel, really little two-parter, and we deliberately went big on beliefs. There wasn't much practical in there. And I think that's quite deliberate because the most important thing, really, if we're thinking about sharing our faith or evangelism, is the beliefs that we have. The beliefs drive us and shape us. And I think it's far too easy, especially for pastors actually, to say, you should be doing more. Because all pastors want churches that are massive and successful, so they look really cool and incredible. And so they must kind of whip everybody into shape and say, you must all be doing more. And I don't think that's fair or right. I don't think it works. I don't think that's what you see the New Testament doing at all. So we went big on kind of convictions, and they're on your sheet there, the series so far. Kind of we wanted to know the gospel really deeply so that we naturally just tell the gospel. And part of telling the gospel is two things: knowing that people are starving, but that we've got good news for people. And I think that the more deeply we believe those things, the more natural it is to share. But today's the practical stuff, so there's a little bit of practical stuff, and we'll do half an hour, then we'll do questions, and then we will finish. So hopefully this will be really encouraging and kind of kickstart four things. A couple of bits of discussion before we start. The first one is on your sheet. How disinterested, because this is what's in the title, how to share your faith in a disinterested world. How disinterested do you think people really are these days in Christianity? It seems to me that things have sort of shifted. So 10, 20 years ago, what was cool was new atheism. You know, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens. And I just think that's not cool anymore. People don't like how dogmatic they were, saying religion is evil, Christianity is complete nonsense. And people seem to have reacted to that as a kind of cultural pushback. And now it's much more likely to find books like David Baddiel's The God Desire, which basically says, I really respect religious people. I think religion is a really good thing. I just know that God doesn't exist. That's what he says. People like that who kind of just think, well, look, religion's pretty good. And interesting, in some ways, I think people like that, you wonder if they seem closer, they might actually be further away from Christianity because they're not troubled by it. They're just kind of, well, whatever. But on the other hand, you've got a big movement of kind of public intellectuals who are really interested in Christianity. The kind of conversion of someone called Ayaan Hirsch Ali, she's called Somalia, from a Somalian background, was pretty prominent and pretty public. She made it quite public herself. And then at the moment, I mean, I keep encountering it. I don't know if anyone listens to The Rest Is Politics, a very kind of popular politics podcast. Simon talked about this last week, but the host, Rory Stewart, is exploring Christianity. He's a kind of public intellectual, I guess you would say. And he often talks about the books he's reading. A few months ago, he was reading Mere Christianity, saying it's really, really interesting. He did a little, what might be called, sermonette at the end of 2024 at the podcast, saying that as a Christian, he believes in hope, and spent time talking about, look, he says the politics he believes is quite bleak at the moment, but he believes in hope, because he believes in Christianity. He talks often of going to church. And he recently, in his podcast, was talking about his big spat with the Vice President of the United States over Twitter, which you might have caught Simon talking about last week. And he was just quoting the Bible, reading bits of the Bible, and saying, this is why I think J.D. Vance is wrong about Christianity. He started quoting Jesus. And I think 20 years ago, you would not have had the most popular politics podcast in the country, the host reading the Bible out and quoting Jesus approving. I mean, just what a change. And in universities, things are kind of good and bad. I know a little bit more about, I guess, the context in universities, because I used to work for Universities and Colleges Christian Fellowship. And I'm doing, at the end of February, I'm going up to Newcastle to kind of do the talks at their events week. And they get something like 150, 200 to their lunch times, and a few to their evenings as well. And apparently, increasingly, you're getting people who are arriving with almost no knowledge of Christianity. So they don't know about Abraham, David, they don't know any of the gospel stories. But what that means is they're really interested and they want to come. So my boss used to say, things are so bad that they're good again. which is interesting. And this is from Gavin Ortland's YouTube channel. Gavin Ortland is brilliant. He's written some great books, including What It Means to Be Protestant, which is well worth a read. Kind of talking about why it's good to be Protestant as opposed to Catholic or Orthodox. And he's got this YouTube channel, and I watched a video that he called A Vibe Shift About Religion, where he looks at a guy called Jordan Peterson, who seems to be exploring matters of faith as well, and has just written a book called We Who Wrestle With God. And he's saying, look, young men especially just want to tap into something ancient. The new atheism didn't offer anything. It was kind of try and live a nice life and then you die and there's nothing, which is pretty bleak. But young men in particular, he's saying, seem to need help tapping into something that's bigger than themselves, tapping into the wisdom of generations, being part of something that's not just them, but is kind of going into a stream that's been going on for centuries. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. So that's worth a watch, I think, that video. Brilliant. Let's do, what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of discussion there, just being honest with ourselves, and then we will jump into Acts chapter 16, which is a fantastic chapter, and then that'll be it. That's where we're going today. So that discussion, the question is, what stops us from sharing our faith? I'm happy to go first. I mean, I find that I work in a church. Loads of my time is spent with people already in church. So and the older I get, the more my friendships, deep friendships, are with people who are Christians already. And so it feels like I don't ever talk to somebody or have real, big, deep relationships with people who are not. But I'm sure that resonates with some. Related to that, I've got a friend here who's nervous. He can't stand the idea that someone might ask him a question he doesn't know the answer to, and he just freezes. To which I always think, answering I don't know is not, that's not a failure, that's okay. But also, he actually does know quite a lot, I went back in to really know stuff. So it's funny what goes on there. Yeah, and I think that's related. I also, sometimes for me, I sometimes think it's better to share Christianity with someone who I'm closer with. So I'm going to wait till I get to know you really well before I tell you loads about you. And especially thinking about how grand what we believe is, and how life-changing and joyous and eternal it is, and how it's big. And then you try and have a conversation with someone, and it just goes flat. I don't know, it feels so weird that something so eternal gets such a flat reception. I don't know if you ever... I remember once at university, I had a friend who seemed really interested in Christianity. I played hockey with him, and he was a slightly surprising guy. He was a bit of a lad in all sense of the word. But he came to church a few times, and I thought, this is brilliant. And we spent loads of time together. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to have a conversation with him about, you know, what do you really think? And I'm going to really go for this. And because I talk a lot, I'd had lots of conversations with people at university. I thought, you know, it's easy, this stuff. I think this is, you know, people are curious and this is great. So I got loads of people at Christian Union to pray and ask to test. I said, this is the day that I'm going to have it. And I took him to the pub and bought him a drink and sat in the garden. I thought, everyone's praying, this is it. He's going to fall on his knees and shout, what must I do to be saved? And I asked him, you know, you've become to church a little bit. What do you make of it? Well, that was my way in. I thought about that question. And he says, yeah, well, I guess it's interesting. Anyway, about tomorrow's match. I've prepared to say this was supposed to be a grand, there was supposed to be music, and the angels singing the trumpets, and instead it was just completely flat. I don't know if that's something, I just feel sometimes it's just Brilliant, let's learn from Paul. Paul knew what he was doing with evangelism, Paul the Apostle. I don't think that's controversial to say. So let's turn to Acts 16 in Bibles. There's a slave girl, she's shouting at Paul. After she's done this for a few days, he gets annoyed, which I don't think is unreasonable. And he shouts, you know, come out of her. The guys who own her are cross. They then put these guys, drag them into the marketplace to face the authorities. The authorities beat them. And there's a bit of anti-Semitism there. These Jews are advocating unlawful customs. I mean, these owners are just jealous and annoyed that they've lost their lucrative income. They get thrown into jail. The jailer, who's not a very nice bloke, puts them in the stocks. They're singing hymns. I mean, that's extraordinary. And everyone's listening to them. Then there's an earthquake. The Roman jailer loses his life if he's lost all the prisoners. He can see that the doors are open. He's about to kill himself. And Paul says, you don't need to do that. We've all decided to sit in here. So he runs in. He's so surprised by this. He says, what must I do to be saved? Which almost feels, you know, it gives Paul an opportunity to share the gospel with him. He gets taken home, washed, fed, teaches the whole family. They all become Christians. In the morning, the authorities say, right, off you go. And Paul says, hang on, I'm a Roman citizen. That's quite a big deal. You know, I've got rights. You can't just beat and jail someone without a trial. So no, you can't just let us slip out. You come and escort us out. The authorities completely panic. And they kind of, massive state apology, they escort them. And then Paul leaves. And he's not just doing that because he can, although he's allowed to. I think he's doing that because here's a tiny church that's just beginning with these three characters in it, Lydia, the slave girl, and a jailer. And Paul doesn't want them to be guilty by association with a kind of rabble-rouser. So he wants to be publicly vindicated in front of everyone so that this church doesn't get tarred with this brush. I think that's what's going on. Anyway, you've got these three characters. If you started a church, would you put on the same team these three? The Lydia, who's a kind of dealer in purple cloth, in other words, just quite upper middle class or upper class, and purple cloth is luxury goods. You've got a slave girl at the bottom of the rung, and a jailer who seems to enjoy violence. That's kind of this big, rough, tough guy covered in tattoos. And those are three people that you wouldn't necessarily put together, would you? But here they are, and all of a sudden they belong together. Let's skip over this discussion for the sake of time. But the discussion we've got on the sheet, pick one of Lydia, the slave girl, the jailer, or even the jailer's wife, and what would their testimony be like? It's a fun exercise to maybe do at home. Because I think I'm trying to make the point that they've all had a different journey to this point. For each of them, a different aspect of Christianity to appeal to them. But also, there's been drastic change. Instead, looking at Paul's practice, let me pick out these top tips. And I think these will be really, really helpful because they just demystify evangelism. The reality is I think we all find evangelism hard. It is just hard. It is scary. It feels like a big deal. A big reason for that is because we believe in spiritual warfare and Satan. The last thing he wants us to do is naturally and joyfully share about Jesus. So he kind of creates all these mind blocks and all these difficulties. But Rico Tice, who's an evangelist in London, basically says, all our objections, if we're really deeply honest, and I think this is a hard thing to hear, but all of our objections and all of the things that stop us can be boiled down to two things. One, we probably don't believe the gospel as wholeheartedly as we should. And two, we probably don't love people as kind of extravagantly as we should. And I think that's a hard thing to hear in my own life, because some of our objections are completely legitimate, but I think he's saying that, for instance, on the one of, let's say, I don't know what I would say, I think he would say, if we really, 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 really love people, we wouldn't care about that, we would just go for it. And I think there is something in that, as hard as it is to hear. My instinct is that people in church really do love people, and really do love God, and really want to do it, absolutely. It's just hard to do. So here's the top tips. And I think I'll spend more time on some of them and not on others, but it'd be good to have room for questions at the end too. So first one is remember that we're a team. It's interesting in Acts 16, if you look at the page across 1111, that, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, Luke, who's writing this book, says they, talking about Paul all the time, and then he slips into we. And I think that happens, verse 8 and 9. So they passed by Mysia and went down to Troas. During the night, Paul had a vision of a man of Macedonia standing and begging him, come over to Macedonia and help us. After Paul had seen the vision, we got ready at once to leave for Macedonia. Isn't that funny? So he joins the crew. Paul never does anything on his own. Never does anything on his own. In fact, there's a really remarkable bit in 2 Corinthians where he says, I had a really great opportunity for the gospel, but I decided not to take it and instead to go and find my friend Timothy. And you just think, Paul says that? But the Christian life is not meant to be lived on its own. And I think the same is true of evangelism, actually. It's so scary to think it's you on your own in your whole office and you've got to save everybody. I think that's just a really scary thing. But I don't think that's the case at all. And I think we're on a team, and I think that plays out in two ways. One, where we can, it's really good if we think we're going to do some evangelism, share Jesus. It's just to bring a mate with you. Whether that's inviting some of our friends who are not yet Christians round for dinner and we invite some people from church and we just see them mix, that's a very natural thing to do. Or we think, I'd love to join a sports team or something. It'd be great to bring a mate from church and we'll both do it. And there's two of us. Very natural to do things in twos. But I think the second way this plays out is actually more important, which is this. One of the reasons that we get freaked out by evangelism is because we think it's all on us as individuals to save the people. But we forget that we're part of a church. So even if we haven't seen people in our own lives come to Jesus yet, the reality is we're part of a church that has grown and is growing. And so because when one part of the team thrives, we all thrive, we've got reasons to celebrate. Whether, you know, we invite, like me, I invited a couple to the current quiz last week. No one came. My two mates couldn't come. That was a bit sad. But other people invited loads of people. And we're on the same team. So that's great. And I was there and I was sort of friendly. If you kind of give to church or stuck in at church, you come to church every week, then you've been a part of some people becoming Christians. And that's brilliant. And I think that's a much healthier way of thinking about it. Not just at St. Michael's, but we're part of Commission. We're also part of the Church of England. So when St. John Tantowick down the road baptised a bunch of people, Hounslow Town Church, just north of us, baptised 20 Iranians in the last 2 years. I mean, that's amazing. And we're part of that because we're Christians, so we're all on the same team. The church is growing in every continent except Europe. We're part of that, and we're a team. I just think that's such a fresh way of thinking about it that gets rid of guilt straight away. Secondly, share wherever you go. There's a really curious phrase in the first bit of chapter 16, isn't it? We were kept by the Holy Spirit from sharing the gospel. I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean that opportunities stopped? Does it mean that no one was interested? Does it mean that literally the Holy Spirit somehow miraculously stopped them from speaking? I don't really know. But then Paul has this vision. Come over to Europe, to Macedonia, and share the gospel over here. And I think, I remember Ed preaching on this to UCCM, and he said, look, the best way of thinking about this story is, God has put you where you are for a reason. So just naturally share where you are. That's okay. Wherever you go, just share it with people and see what God does. Don't freak out too much about what we're not doing, but just share wherever we go. That's absolutely fine. Thirdly, go to where people are. So when Paul turns up in Philippi, he's faced with this enormous city, and actually no one in Europe at that stage has become a Christian. So Europe is an entire continent. This is the first European moment for Christianity. And he turns up in the new continent on a new city. It'd be so easy to feel very daunted, wouldn't it? Just think, goodness, what would he do? So what does he do? He goes to a place where people are already quite religious. A place of prayer on a river outside the city. And just starts talking there. The first step is always the hardest one, isn't it? But he goes to where people are gathered and where they might be interested. And I think that's a really helpful thing. Some of us in church, we've been in church a long time, our best friends, like I've shown you, are Christians. And so we're just not going to where people are who we're not. I think just being around normal people is a really healthy thing. Just going there. And I think it'd be great if, as a church, we just kind of lean into that a bit more. So when we were at the school gate, it's so tempting to be on the phone doing some emails while waiting for kids, but why not just say hello to the person next to you? Or perhaps we've got, I mean, the best thing to do is if we've got a particular interest, go to a club or a sports team or something that shares that interest. Just go. So if you're into chess or languages or a book club, sports or just something, and if you choose something that you're already really interested in, it won't feel like a chore. You know, I really like, you know, I was part of a football team for kind of years until I couldn't quite make it work on a Saturday with the young kids, and it just never felt like a chore. And although I didn't do lots of kind of telling people about Jesus, they all knew I was a Christian, so there was an opportunity for any of them if they wanted to ask about it, and one or two really did. And they, what was it they said? They couldn't quite believe that someone who was young was a priest, and they couldn't quite believe that a priest would tackle in the way that I do. Let's just go where people are at. Fourthly, use your home. It's really fascinating that both Lydia says, look, just come to my house, let's talk about this, in verses 13 to 15. Also the jailer brings them out, brings them to our house. It's a natural thing in the world, isn't it, to be hospitable, to bring people into homes. That's a great thing. And there's something about being in your house that makes you feel a bit more comfortable and a bit more. So we should go to others' houses, we should invite others. Fifth one, and I think this one's really helpful. We tend to think everyone in church is completely sorted. So when we're sharing Christianity, what we should be doing is ignoring everyone in church and going out there and sharing Jesus with everybody else and bringing them in. But I don't think that's true, actually. I think there are loads of people in church who are all in different places. And I think two things. I think there'll be people in church who come each week who probably not completely get it yet and would really do with someone coming alongside and just chanting Jesus to them. Secondly, for those of us, we kind of think in binary categories. So there's the kind of non-Christians here and there's the Christians here, and we need to ignore these guys and go after these guys. The reality is we're all just people, and all of us are on a journey of loving Jesus more. And as we draw alongside each other, we can just help each other. So I think instead of, you know, I don't know what's doing this, but instead of overanalyzing where someone's at, let's just talk about Jesus to each other. And that would be a really healthy and good thing. You know, controversially, Ed and Simon, we can talk to them about Jesus and encourage them just as we can someone who's in our family who's not a Christian. A guy called John Leonard had a book on evangelism called Get Real, which I really, really liked, and I recommend it, Get Real. And he's got a chapter called Evangelize Christians and Disciple Non-Christians. And what he meant by that is, instead of just thinking there's different categories, why don't we talk to everybody about Jesus in a way that really helps each other? And why don't, for people who are not yet Christians, just include them in the life of the church, give them jobs, treat them as if they really want to get this stuff and live. And I'm sure that they will. He had an example of a young woman who joined his home group Bible study, and by the time she became a Christian, she was already serving on Rota for 6 months and studying the Bible for 6 months, and so becoming a Christian was dead easy because, you know, she was just included. I think there's something really healthy about that. They go to a place where people are already praying and doing and just start sharing. And just, yeah. We want more people, you know, what's our phrase that we have in church? Every life following Jesus. Not use the Christians to get at everybody else. We want every life leaning into Jesus. I think that's a really healthy thing. I know I feel like I'm over-egging this one, but I think that is a key one. I think, you know, if we wanted to, I think everyone in church should think about joining things like the youth and kids team, because you get to share the gospel with a new generation. That's a really, really meaningful thing. I used to spend time with a kid in one of my old churches who was a great kid, but he used to come to youth group a bit early, and we'd have tea together in the office, me and him, and there's always someone there, and we'd hang out, and we got to know each other really well. And when he started coming to the evening service, he'd come and sit by me every time, and we'd sit and chat. He was sort of 12, 13, 14. And I confess that, I chat to him about all kinds of things, and sometimes I'd also chat to him about what we've been learning in the service and things like that. And I thought, he doesn't always seem that interested, but I'll keep chatting. A few years after I left, I tuned in for his baptism. He got baptised and watched his testimony. And I don't even remember this conversation happening, but apparently after one Sunday evening service, I said to him, anyway, what do you think about all this? You know, it's not quite enough that your parents believe it. You've got to believe it too. And he, in his testimony, said that was the moment that he stopped and thought about it. I think we're far too easy to think everyone in church is just fine, sorted. And I don't know if that is the case. So that's, you know, that's my permission for us to kind of just talk to everyone about Jesus. I think that's absolutely fine. This, we've talked about a little bit before, but panic not if it feels ordinary. I think for Paul, he must have written loads of letters to people and said, like, I'm about to go to Europe and evangelize Europe, and this is a Roman colony in Philippi. I need everyone to pray for me and give me loads of money. And maybe he had a salary that was raised of kind of, I don't know, £30,000, and his expenses, and people were giving thousands of pounds. So they're expecting great things, and it's the Apostle Paul, and he'll probably fill stadiums all across the Roman world with thousands of people. Instead, he goes to outside the gate to a river and just talks to Seemingly, I think women, as they say, speak to the women who gathered there. This doesn't, you know, they don't want to make a Netflix film about that moment. That doesn't feel like a really grand strategy for reaching the known world. And it probably feels quite ordinary. The Bible says talking to people about Jesus is extraordinary. It doesn't need to feel extraordinary. It can feel like a really bumbling, rubbishy conversation, but actually, something real is going on. So it's just, don't worry about your feelings. It is a big thing to do. Remember that everyone is different. Some people become Christians very, very quickly. Some people are in church, say, for 10, 20 years without getting it, and then suddenly they get it one day. Some people have miracles, like in this story, the slave girl. Other people, they just hear it and go, yeah, I think that's true. That's just a helpful thing to know. Persevere and don't write anyone off. I don't know about you, I've got family members who have been in church for a while, stopped coming. It's very easy to think, just to focus on others, to pray for others, and to think, well, it could always happen somewhere else. It's never going to happen in my house or in my home. But I don't think that's true. I think we need to persevere. Paul keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. Let me read to you an amazing quote from a guy called Jim Packer from his book, Evangelism and the Sovereignty of God. It's a longish quote, but let me read it and I can always email it out. You yourself, since you became a Christian, have been learning constantly how sinful you are. Yet Christ has saved you, and that should be enough to convince you that he can save anyone. So persevere in presenting Christ to unconverted people as you find opportunity. You are not on a fool's errand. You are not wasting either your time or theirs. You have no reason to be ashamed of your message or half-hearted and apologetic in delivering it. You have every reason to be bold and free and natural and hopeful of success. For God can give his truth and effectiveness that you and I cannot give it. God can make his truth triumphant to the conversion of the most seemingly hardened unbeliever. You and I would never write off anyone as hopeless and beyond the reach of God if we believe in the sovereignty of his grace. So I think about a person that you would most long to learn to become a Christian. Someone that you think that would never happen. It can happen. God raised Jesus from the dead. Penultimately, speak about Jesus. You might have heard the saying, preach the gospel and where necessary use words, attributed to Francis of Assisi. We all know what that's trying to say, which is that, you know, actions are important, they speak loudly, you must live a godly life that looks good. And my instinct is that lots of Christians and lots of us, in fact all of you guys, are living good lives, and people will notice that in ways that are surprising. But here's the problems with that quote from Francis of Assisi. One, Francis of Assisi never said it. Two, Francis of Assisi preached all the time. And three, it's not true. But apart from that, it's a phenomenal quote that we should use all the time. And we should just, it's just true. Paul says in Romans, look, people need to believe in Jesus. They can't believe unless they hear about him. They can't hear about him unless we tell them. So therefore, we go and tell people. And it's, you know, we know that. But you can see it in here. Paul, what does it say in verse 13? We sat down and began to speak to the women who'd gathered there. Just very natural, very normal. Similarly with the jailer, he comes, and it's interesting, he says, what must I do to be saved? Which is what the slave girl had been shouting for many days. These guys know the way to be saved. So he must have heard something of what they were already doing. And he asks, and they sit and just talk with him. So we do know that sooner or later it involves words. And that might involve a pain barrier. I think it can involve questions. So it's really good to ask the friends, what do you believe about the world and what's going to happen and when we die and things like that? And I find that gives me really confidence when I hear what my friends believe, because I think, oh, it's not that you just believe nothing. And it's not that everyone's either a Christian or just kind of completely anti. Actually, there's millions of worldviews out there. It's just that the most common one is the Christian one. Loads of people believe lots of different things. But sooner or later, it's worth getting through the pain barrier, whether that's asking a question or saying, look, do you know what I believe? Do you know what I'd do at church. And it's good to think about how we might do that. One that I do is, when people ask me how my weekend is, I stop just opening with what I did on Saturday night. And I've started saying, well, I went to church on Sunday, it was really good this week. People were really nice. And the sermon was on this. And that's just a really natural way of saying, you know, that's what I believe. If they turn around and say, just don't express any interest, well, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But some will be interested. Some will be. The last one, really key, let's bring our friends and our family to God in prayer. We know that this is a work of God, but it sometimes feels like we just do it all. But what was it in verse 13? We spoke to the women who had gathered there. And then verse 14, later on, Lydia, she was a worshipper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. So we speak, God opens. That's what happens. And if God opens a heart, then we basically can't do too rubbish a job. Like, we just can't. If the Lord opens a heart, we can say all the wrong words and it'll still work because God does what he does, which is very encouraging. People say that evangelism is talking to people about God. I wonder if it needs to start with talking to God about people. Just, are there people that we pray for regularly? I'm really open to more questions, comments, emails, things like that. Hopefully that was helpful. I mean, it's limited time, isn't it, in some ways? But I think, guys, I think just give it a go. Give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? And hopefully there's a different thing that the Lord might bring on each of our hearts from that, because we're all good at different things, and we're all in different places with it.